Division and for the 7th Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning.
First case this morning is Jones Hall against Burge. Mr. Hornstrom.
May it please the court, I am Charles Hornstra, a lawyer representing the defendant's appellants in this matter, and we are appealing from an order of the Federal District Court of the Western District of Wisconsin requiring that the state air condition one of its prisons.
Have you already expended money in that direction?
Yes, and I think it's like $250,000 so far, or $300,000.
Here's my problem. You agreed to cool the cells under the plain language of the consent decree. Now you would rather address the effects of the heat because it's just too expensive to cool the cells. Why didn't you just move to alter the consent decree?
The consent decree itself was very indeterminate and did not prescribe a specific duty and called for the exercise of judgment. That is evident, I think, from two words within this, the language in question. One, that the DOC would investigate. That means something had to be discovered, something had to be found out, something had to be inquired into. Facts had to be examined, and then it would implement a means as practical to cool the cells, if there is one, if there was one. Now, in the case of a prison, we think the word practical has to mean far more than what was mechanically possible. For example, I assume it would be the case that in the event we opened all the cell doors, that we would be able to move air a little better and with dehumidifiers maybe achieve the goal. But in the context of a prison, we wouldn't say that was a practical solution.
Well, what I'm wondering is what evidence there is in the record that the measures that the state has adopted, the ice chips, the short pants, the extra showers. When you talk about the $250,000, are you talking about that sort of thing?
I don't think our argument is so much that we're relying on the cost. The cost is a factor, it's a serious factor. It's irreversible if we don't win. I think our concern with the district courts not deferring to our policy judgment as to what was practical is that it will cause, it will have a destabilizing effect among other inmates in other prisons who do not have air conditioning.
I'm not quite sure that's my question. What I'm trying to figure out is what evidence there is in the record. I mean, there's a problem, it seems to me, with you trying to make your factual record up here on appeal, because the plaintiffs haven't had a chance to challenge your assertions about this or about, you know, the impracticality of air conditioning or...
Well, as a matter of fact, Your Honor, they did have that chance, I believe. Their own motion attached as Exhibit 6, our statement of our policy concern. And when it came to the evidentiary hearing, that was in their motion papers as what they were trying to deal with.
When it came to the evidentiary hearing, did you make an argument that the Prison Litigation Reform Act required particular evidence or findings?
No, we did not make that argument.
Well, that's your principle, maybe your only argument here. How has it been preserved if you didn't make it at the hearing?
Well, because the judge did make those findings back in June 2002, at the time of the consent decree, It was the kind of thing we would have expected her to have attempted to make at this time.
Without any need for a litigant to engage in adversary proceedings. Normally, judges make findings in response to requests by litigants. And one does have a sense that if the judge didn't make these findings, it's because no one asked her to.
Yeah, and it was the plaintiff's motion and their burden. And we didn't know that that wasn't going to be met until after the fact of the matter.
I don't understand why you don't have to follow Section 3626B and move to terminate the injunction in the district court.
That may be an optional remedy to us. On the other hand, we feel we have been placed under an injunction to air condition a prison, and that is appealable.
Did you file any litigation briefs before the hearing?
Yes.
Did they mention the PLRA?
They did. No, I don't believe it did.
I also was trying to figure out what in the world the court below did to, you know, to warrant mandamus. I mean, your mandamus argument excluded a very important part of the standard. You have to show that she so far exceeded the proper bounds of judicial discretion as to be legitimately considered usurpative in character, or a violation, you know, of a clear and indisputable legal right, or at the very least, patently erroneous. Where is all that?
Well, I think the clear error is in the failure to make the findings the statute requires.
Without anyone
asking.
Well, I'm not sure that the statute makes an excuse for that section. Now, it's true that if the plaintiff never asked for it, it may be that they waived the opportunity to have had those findings made, but it was part of the plaintiff's burden, we think, to have made the necessary record to support those findings.
Prison Litigation Reform Act gives the states a pretty good defense, but one might think that the states have to make it or rely on it. And you can choose to rely on it, you can choose to waive it.
You've got the other problem here that I think that because of the state's admissions before the district court that air conditioning was the only way to achieve what had been promised, the court was simply ordering, you know, the state to do what it had already agreed to do. And if the state felt that circumstances had changed, it should have moved to amend the decree.
Well, I don't think that the case was made for the order that was made on the basis of the language that it was, because, as I suggested, the word practical, as with any other industry, has to take on meaning by the industry of which it is a part, and to focus on simply one aspect of the meaning of the word practical, namely whether there's a mechanical means, we think severs the word from the environment of which it's a part.
Well, your argument that makes it impractical in your eyes is the fact that it becomes so attractive to other prisoners in the system that they'll try to get to this prison?
That's the worry of our officials, yes. They have a serious worry about that. And that's why I say, when you look at that word practical, we could maybe have done the same thing by opening those cell doors, but in the parlance of the prison environment, that's just not practical. And we feel that district judge, by excluding that PLRA environment, prison regulation environment, made a clear error.
Have you had comparable situations from other jurisdictions that show that's the case?
No, I can't say that I know that, and I've got some similar type experiences myself in the field, but it's not in this record. The main point we want to make is that when the district court thought she didn't have to make those findings because they had been made in the original consent decree, it begs the question whether the original consent decree compelled air conditioning. The second error is that the PLRA requires that any prospective relief, let's have those findings made. And then third, we think the settlement agreement has to be construed consistent with the PLRA, not only because of the several references therein being so construed, but also because under the case law, we don't believe that a settlement agreement can supersede the PLRA. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Hornstra. Mr. Fleming.
May it please the court. The consent decree in this case requires the defendants to investigate and implement as practical a means of cooling the cells during summer heat waves. Now, the defendants stipulated that this decree meets all of the requirements of the Prison Litigation Reform Act. They also stipulated that the district court would have the authority to enforce
maybe wrongly.
I'm sorry?
Maybe wrongly, right? How does this decree meet all of the requirements of the Prison Litigation Reform Act?
Well, Your Honor, the defendant stipulated and the district court found.
Well, the state so said, but I'm just asking for an explanation how it did.
Well, in this particular case, Your Honor, it's well established that excessive heat can violate the Eighth Amendment and that this provision,
normally one doesn't think of 80 degrees as excessive heat. In that event, the Constitution was itself unconstitutional. It was negotiated in heat well over 80.
Your Honor,
have you ever been in a closed room in Philadelphia in the summer?
Your Honor, we're not talking about 80 degrees. We're talking about heat index readings that the U.S. government says are dangerous for everybody. We're talking about heat index readings that a board-certified psychiatrist pose a risk of death to people on psychotropic medications. And all of this evidence, Your Honor, is completely unrebutted.
Is there any evidence that anyone at this facility has ever been injured by heat?
No, Your Honor, but the Supreme Court made clear in Helling v. Virginia
that then one would not think it is the least restrictive way to deal with some clear problem. Normally, I mean, it's like saying that what you need to do is, we suspect that somebody will commit a tort in the future, let's go out and enjoin future torts, right? Rule one, no tort without injury.
Well, Your Honor, the Supreme Court made clear in Helling that the injury is the risk, a serious risk of substantial harm, and the Supreme Court made very clear that you don't need to wait until there are dead bodies to get an injunction.
In Helling, people were actually inhaling the smoke.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not clear. By the way, that was just remanded for proceedings. The court did not find there was any violation.
No, the court made clear that dangerous conditions can violate the Eighth Amendment, and that's what we have here, Your Honor, according to the U.S. government.
In any event,
pose a risk of harm.
The state has never moved to vacate or change the
decree. Correct, Your Honor. Now, this court, under this court's decision in Gautreaux, there is only jurisdiction over this appeal if it is obvious that a modification has occurred. And the defendants admit, and it is undisputed, that air conditioning is the only means of cooling the cells. Now, given that admission, that the only way of implementing the requirement that they cool the cells is to install air conditioning, then logically it cannot be a modification. The two orders become the same. If a decree says defendants must do X.
I asked counsel again, and maybe he misunderstood or I misunderstood his response, that money had been already expended to put air conditioning in place. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Let me make a couple of points. First of all, part of the prison is already air conditioned. The warden's office, the administrative offices are already air conditioned. The district court's order only requires them to extend air conditioning to the cells. That extension project costs $780,000, which is less than 1/20% of the DOC's budget. And of that $780,000, it's undisputed that approximately $200,000 has already been spent.
Well, I'm still not understanding. The money already expended, was that just for the administrative offices, or was that for...
No, that was for this project, Your Honor, for extending it to the cell.
Well, explain in concrete terms, what has been done? They've laid pipe or whatever you do when you put air conditioning in?
Your Honor, I don't know exactly what has been done. I don't think that's in the record. What is in the record is the amount of money that's already been spent on this project until this court issued its stay.
Without any explanation of what it is that's been done?
Perhaps Mr. Hornstra could address that. I don't believe it's in the record, Your Honor. I apologize. So because there is no There is no modification here. This court has no jurisdiction of this interlocutory order interpreting a consent decree, and the appeal should be...
I don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but if the state's already started expenditure on the project that they were required, what are we talking about?
Well, that's a good question, Your Honor. And when the state admits, the decree says the defendants have to do X. The state says, we've investigated, and there's only one way we can do X. Then they have to do
X. Well, their argument is that this will make it so attractive to prisoners if they want to do bad things to get into it.
Respectfully, Your Honor, that's an argument that not even the defendants take seriously. If they took it seriously, they would have made it in the district court. In any event, when they did tardily make it in the district court after filing their notice of appeal, the district court made a factual finding that though their speculations of unrest were implausible, a finding that the defendants do not contest as seriously or as clearly erroneous in this court.
Given the magnitude of the cost of implementing the district court's order, could one say that order alters the pre-existing relationship between the parties?
No, Your Honor. And first, as Mr. Hornstra frankly said, they have never relied on cost as a reason not to do this. And perhaps that's because the cost is less than 1/20 of 1% of the DOC's budget. But again, this might be a different case if there were many different ways that they could cool the cells and the district court had picked air conditioning and said, you must air condition. That's not this case, Your Honor. The defendants themselves say air conditioning is the only way we can cool the cells. And if the decree says cool the cells, the defendants say air conditioning is the only way it can be done, then logically that cannot be a modification. The two orders become the same.
Suppose the state says, well, thank you very much, we appreciate your advice, but we're not installing air conditioning. What would happen next?
Well, what did happen was our motion to enforce, which the district court granted.
No, and the state says we're not installing air conditioning.
Well,
what would happen next?
One option would be a motion for contempt.
Contempt of what?
Contempt of either the original decree or probably the enforcement order.
Well, if it's contempt of the enforcement order, then the enforcement order has to be an injunction, and if it's injunction, it's appealable. Would it be possible to hold the state in contempt of the consent decree itself for not installing air conditioning? See, that's the line we've been drawing between the judge giving the parties a piece of their mind about what the decree means and the judge entering an independently enforced order. If you think this is an order that can be enforced by contempt, then it's appealable, too.
Your Honor,
that leaves the question whether, since you deny that it is an appealable order, whether the state, in order to avoid being held in contempt of the consent decree, has to install air conditioning.
Your Honor, as the court knows, there is a whole body of law on contempt and the required specificity of the order, and I just don't know standing here today if the original order.
I think it would be really hard to file a motion to hold the state in contempt of the original consent decree of 2 years ago for not installing air conditioning.
Perhaps 2 years ago, Your Honor, but perhaps not now that they have admitted that, again, a crucial piece of this case is their admission that air conditioning is the only way. If the original decree, given that the original decree says cool the cells, defendants say only one way to cool the cells and that's air conditioning, perhaps a contempt, they could be found in contempt of the original order under those facts.
And I'm beating a dead horse, too, but, and I... Of course, I don't want you to be going outside of the record, but I am sitting here trying to think of what else $200,000 could have been spent on other than beginning to implement the air conditioning.
Oh, Your Honor, I'm sorry if I was unclear. I believe that money has been spent on beginning to implement the air conditioning. That's my belief, and I'm sure Mr. Hornster will correct me if I'm wrong. But the amount, and this is in their motion for a stay in this court, that they said they have already spent approximately $200,000 of the $780,000 to implement the district court's order.
Right, but I don't know what they've done. Like, you know, dig it. Well,
I apologize. I don't know.
Yeah, it's very hard to not know that.
Yes, Your Honor. Let me address the defendant's PLRA argument. Now, the defendant, this is a judgment in a class action. which binds the entire class. So the defendant's theory is that they are protected by the preclusive effect of this judgment. It protects them from lawsuits brought by individual prisoners. But at the same time, they have no enforceable obligations whatsoever under this decree. Their theory is that the district court is powerless to enforce this decree unless it first finds a constitutional violation. And that amounts to arguing that the decree does not exist, because that's the position that the plaintiffs would be in absent the decree. You can't get relief unless you show a constitutional violation. But there's absolutely no support in either the PLRA or the case law for this position. Now, the defendants cite the Ninth Circuit's decision in Hallett versus Morgan, but here's what that case actually says. The enforcement of a valid consent decree is not the kind of prospective relief considered by Section 3626A. As long as the underlying consent order remains valid, neither party has made a Section 3626B motion to terminate, the court must be able to enforce it. That's 296 F3rd at 743. And this court in Berlanger versus Coddy made clear that even a decree that was not entered in compliance with the PLRA's requirements remains enforceable until a termination motion is granted. There's simply no support for the defendant's argument that a court cannot enter an enforceable injunction in a prison case, and that's what their argument amounts to. Again, moreover, Your Honor, the defendants admitted in the district court that air conditioning is the only practical way of cooling the cells. And that, as we explained in our brief, is a binding judicial admission that they cannot back out of now. The court has repeatedly made clear that statements by counsel at oral argument bind their clients, and this court has repeatedly based its decision on concessions made by counsel at oral argument. I'd like to address also the harm done to the plaintiffs by the defendant's apparent strategic decision to withhold all their arguments from the district court. They are now making a very fact-specific argument, an argument that the court cannot enforce the decree absent a constitutional violation, and that the evidence in the record does not establish a constitutional violation. And this is exactly the kind of appellate litigation by ambush that the rule against raising new arguments on appeal was meant to avoid. The Supreme Court said in Singleton that that rule exists in order that litigants not be surprised on appeal by final decision there of issues upon which they have had no opportunity to introduce evidence. So the defendants didn't argue in the district court that a constitutional violation had to be found before the decree could be enforced. They didn't argue that the record was inadequate to establish a constitutional violation. They argue that now that we have been deprived of the opportunity to make a factual record. Now, the defendants argue, again, that air conditioning is not practical because it would make this prison so enticing that prisoners would assault staff in an effort to be transferred here and locked in a windowless concrete cell with almost no human contact for all but five hours a week. And as I said, the defendant's decision to withhold this argument from the district court shows that even they don't take it seriously. And in any event, the district court did consider it when it was belatedly raised, made a finding of fact that it was not plausible that the defendants don't challenge here. Even if the district court had to make findings that its enforcement order was necessary to avert a constitutional violation, it made such findings in substance. The court found that, and I quote, defendants constructed a facility in which inmates are subjected to temperatures that can pose a serious risk to their well-being, particularly if they are taking medications or have health conditions that prevent their bodies from adjusting to high heat. And at last count, in September of 2003, there were 66 prisoners at this prison who were taking psychotropic medications. Again, in denying the state's motion for a stay, the district court found the record shows that inmates subjected to excessively hot temperatures face potentially severe health consequences.
How large is this prison?
I believe the current population is approximately, in the by 300s, perhaps 400, Your Honor. Continuing with the district court, unlike non-prisoners without air conditioning, plaintiffs are not free to open a window, turn on a fan, or take refuge at a local air-conditioned shopping center or movie theater. And the district court repeatedly emphasized not only the difference between non-prisoners and prisoners and their vulnerability to heat, but the unique features of this prison that are different from other Wisconsin prisons that make the heat particularly dangerous to prisoners held there. In 1995 and 1999, Wisconsin suffered severe heat waves that killed scores of people. Fortunately, this prison was not yet open at that time. But it's only a matter of time until there's another heat wave, and the evidence is unrebutted in the record that prisoners at this prison are at a serious risk of injury or death. The appeal should be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. If the court finds jurisdiction, the order of the district court should be affirmed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, Mr. Hornstra?
To Your Honor, Judge Rubner, I don't know that the record does not show the state of the construction project, except that it's about a third of the way through. What's been done is not in the record.
Something is a third of the way through.
Right. And while that happened, and I think this goes to Judge Connie's question, is the judge entered an order that we start air conditioning promptly, immediately, so we set to work to do it. We moved for a stay before Judge Crabb. Judge Crabb, I think, took six to eight weeks before denying our motion, at which point we had gotten started. And then we came here for a stay of her order, which this court granted, and that's why it stopped at this point in the game. The other point I'd like to make is that counsel said twice, and I think mistakenly, so I'd like to correct the record, that we never presented these concerns about the effect on behavior of inmates in the record below. It just isn't true. On page 148 of our appendix is their Exhibit 6 to their motion to enforce, which contains the exact words we've been talking about, namely that our installing air conditioning would reduce morale, create union problems, and cure security risks. For instance, our security personnel have voiced concerns that some inmates would consider assaulting staff or other inmates in order to get transferred to a facility with air conditioning. And the warden eventually adopted that by affidavit. And counsel for the plaintiff below.
Is there any evidence of that?
No. We are having to rely on judgment of experienced corrections officials.
But there are states.
We have not seen a riot.
There are states, and the federal government for that matter, that provide air conditioning in their most secure facilities where people are locked in behind solid doors almost all the time. Does that happen in the jurisdictions that provide air conditioning?
I'm not aware of it. I'm not aware.
So it's just, dare I say, hot air. Right? This is an easily verifiable proposition, and you provide no factual basis for it. Just hot air.
Well, I can't speak to those other states, their situation with their other prisoners, whether the character of the place at all. I can't speak to that, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
My final point in terms of whether this was before the district court, and this is on our brief page 23 footnote 10, quoting plaintiff's counsel from expressing that concern. It is a concern, genuinely felt, that was made below. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.